Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
Can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
Can you say Josh Wiggyworm?
No, it's Josh Widdicombe.
Very nice.
There we go. A little bit of back and forth, bit of French and Saunders there.
They're doing Edinburgh, wasn't it? This is my 8-year-old Liliana encouraging my 6-year-old Rosalia to say your names. We talk a lot about the podcast and they like to listen to the other intros. They've now adopted calling you Josh Wigglyworm. Absolutely love the poddy. I live for Tuesdays and Fridays. Kelly from Essex, 455 months. What's that, 40?
Oh, lovely stuff, Josh.
Lovely stuff.
Josh, I think we need to be open with the audience. It's been a very stressful start this morning.
Yeah, my fault.
We started a bit late. What happened, Josh?
Well, I had the time to do the nursery run because we moved it from 9 to 9.30.
So your youngest is still in nursery because that's not term time.
That's not term time. That's all the way through.
But is your daughter off school?
Yeah, although she was going to go in, but now she's going to the zoo. She was going to go to play scheme.
Yeah, how many days have you booked in for sort of, you know, there's like Easter camp or whatever it is?
Well, there's 4 available.
For the whole 2 weeks?
This week, there's none next week.
Right.
So she wanted to do all 4, I'll be honest with you.
Fair
it
enough.
Was quite a hammer blow to us. But she wanted to do all of them.
Most people have to convince the kids to go in for more.
Yeah, no, I know.
Nah, I don't fancy it here, actually. Not for me.
I'm not saying she's a nerd, but she took up the option of 4 more days of school voluntarily.
Well, it's not school, though. It's fun, more fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, she liked all the things because they were making things.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And they listed what they were doing. And she was like, yeah, I want to do that day and that day and that day and that day.
But she's not, though, now.
No, she's going to the zoo instead.
Oh, that's nice. On her own?
Cousin. Yeah. Yeah. She just fancies it. She's getting the tube to Camden.
I think it's good, isn't it? Letting them have a bit of independence.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not really into the zoo, so she can enjoy it herself. No, she's going to the zoo with her cousin.
Oh, nice.
And adults as well. Yeah, she's quite a... It was her friend's birthday yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And she went to the party, but because I wasn't around, I dropped her off at her friend's house before the party. And I said, you know, help the mum get the party ready. And she... Well, she got there and they hadn't done the party bags and she insisted to the mum that they go and buy party bags and did them with her. She likes to impress other parents.
But from an organisational point of view?
Yeah, she likes to be useful to other parents.
Right, okay, let's do that. Oh, I'll help you do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What goes in an East London party bag? Hemp? Some sage to burn?
Well, you do get some pretty trendy party bags going, yeah. Often seeds.
Sustainable shit.
Yeah, often seeds, I'd say.
Yeah, often seeds. The shittest of all the party bag gifts.
Do you think?
Yeah, it's hard work.
I love a seed.
No, you come back from a party, the last thing I need to be doing is in the garden getting some soil to pot a seed that's going to be overwatered, spill, and just be a shit plant. It will never grow.
No.
Basically, mud water on the table for the next week, and then in the bin.
Yeah.
No, Josh, why were you late, though? That's it. I've not got a problem with it, but you said something went wrong.
Yeah, so got in the car.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even get in the car. Got to the car.
Yep, for the nursery run.
For the nursery run. And this is classic me. Bird had shat all over the windscreen.
How much are we talking, Josh?
Oh, straight into action, took a photo.
This guy lives and breathes content. Come on.
Yeah.
Sling it this way.
So.
Oh, there you go. Big old bit. That is not good, but it's not ruining the visibility, is it?
It's right in front of me. I couldn't drive with that on the windscreen.
So... Let me guess what you did. You put the window wipers on and spread it and it got worse.
No, I attempted to use the windscreen washer.
Yeah.
Obviously it's empty.
Of course it says, you don't understand cars.
No, of course it's fucking empty.
Tyres are flat, no petrol.
Well, interestingly, on the tyres, I have had a warning that they are underpumped for at least 2 months that I do need to see about.
Right, Josh, you've got to do that. That is actually dangerous.
No, it says I can drive, but I can't go over 80 miles an hour, which obviously I don't do anyway, because you know who I am.
Yeah. So you was late because of bird poo on the windscreen?
Well, then I had to go inside.
Yep.
get some hot water, wash it off, get in the car. Obviously, there's not enough petrol to get to and from nursery. Oh my God.
Yep.
So I had to go to the petrol station.
Petrol station.
Yeah.
After drop-off. It's always stressful with a baby in the car, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't really leave them.
No. So there we go.
You always see that stressed parent with like a baby on their hip and a toddler up their side when they're trying to pay for petrol. And you think, it must be really low.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
If they can't do it on the way back from wherever they're going.
Yeah.
So you have to get petrol and the bird shit in the car windscreen. But you're here now. Was it, yeah. Is there anything else? Or was...
No, that was the reason.
Because right, I'd say, Josh, I was worried something bad happened. Can I play your voice note of what happened here?
Yeah.
Here we go. Here we go.
Guys, I'm having an absolute car shocker.
I think that's fair.
Can we do 9:40? I've just... it's been a disaster. My morning has been an absolute effing disaster.
I'd argue that wasn't a disaster.
No, I know.
I'd say you needed petrol.
I think I'm being melodramatic.
Yeah. I'd say you just needed some petrol and there was a bird poo in your car, but absolute disaster. I thought you'd crashed. Not a bad one, but I thought you'd like bumped into someone, had to exchange. It's like a couple hundred quid's worth, but you have to go for insurance, exchange details.
Yeah, no.
Then you said this.
Feel free to use that message. The good news is I've got an anecdote. The bad news is my life's out of control.
I think my life is out of control. I've got no petrol, no windscreen washer, and my tyres are flat, and I've parked under a tree without realising it.
I'd argue both of them aren't true. I don't think you've got an anecdote out of it. I don't think your life's out of control, Josh.
I think you're definitely right on the anecdote.
But I do think maybe you're too busy to do all the little normal life admin jobs.
Yeah.
And then when they mount up, nothing works, does it?
No.
That's the issue.
There we go. Right, well, should we bring on our guest? A man with an anecdote.
Oh, this guy.
More than one anecdote. This guy. Fucking hell, I love Mike Bubbins.
In it, we agree, like, a body transformation sort of deal, don't we? Which is something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got to get in shape for that, Josh.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Here's Mike Bubbins. Very funny man. He's on tour. Go and see him.
Hello, Mike Bubbins.
Hello. Hi, Josh. How are you, mate?
Hello. And Rob's here as well.
Hey, Rob. How are you, pal?
Hello, Mike. Thanks for doing this.
We're very excited.
My pleasure. You know, I've got nothing else to do, literally nothing else to do.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Well, I'm waiting for a town planner to come around. That's about it, really. That's my day.
A town planner?
I'm not going to plan a town.
What plans have you got?
I'm going to build my own new town, Bubbins New Town in the South Wales area. It'll be the Welsh Milton Keynes. I cannot wait.
It's pure roundabouts everywhere.
Yeah.
What's the town planner coming around for?
Yeah, what are you doing? An extension?
And I want to build a garage for my classic cars.
Oh, here we go.
But that sounds posher than it is, really. They're just old Fords and old Pontiacs.
But where's that? On another bit of land or by your house?
It'll be in my house, but it's in front of the front of the house, you see, Rob. So planning-wise, it's a grey area.
Okay, and that's what he's coming around to have a look at. It's quite a high-pressured chat, that, isn't it?
Oh, big time, yeah. And there's also a tree preservation order to negotiate, so...
Okay, but they don't understand you're trying to preserve your cars.
Well, exactly, mate. You know, my car is to me what that tree is to a wood sparrow.
And when's the sparrows meeting?
I don't stop them building a nest, do I?
I just find it's hard to know how sort of like charming or sort of matey to be with that town planning type. You know, people that they have a hold over you.
Oh, yeah.
Of they can say yes or no to your plans.
Yeah.
I can never get it right. I always feel like I'm going too hard.
Yeah, it is hard not to over-try, is that the word?
Yeah. Hello, mate, you're right. I'll come in. Do you want a cup of tea? Yeah, do you want to put you on holiday? Where do you want to go? You're right. Anything I can do?
Does this guy hold your future in his hands or is he trying to help you?
I think he's trying to help me.
All right, so he's not making the decision.
Well, he can tell Josh that I'm a kindred spirit. I'm interested in preserving the character of the area as anybody else.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You love that tree.
But if I can do that while chopping down trees and building a garage, I will.
I don't think anyone could accuse you of being too modern, Mike. There's no way that anyone's going... The problem with Mike Bubbins is he's got no time for the past.
Well, we should explain your vibe to sort of new listeners, Mike, because, you know, you're sort of... Well, you're good pals of Ellis James, who's been on the pod a few times. You're obviously a parent, which is why you're here. Another stand-up comedian. But also, you're very 70s, aren't you, in your look and your style?
I do like that era, Rob, yeah.
Yeah.
I like the cars and the telly and the clothes.
So what are you wearing today, Mike? We can see you, but it's...
I'm just wearing a sort of one of my typical type of shirts. This one's probably a little more dressed down than normal.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a moustache.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wearing sideburns.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm sat in front of a rather large portrait of Burt Reynolds in Smokey the Bandit. and a 70s table lamp.
There you go.
See, I would argue for the listener to picture it, on a normal day for you, you could be mistaken as someone heading to Butlin's for a 70s weekender.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like Ron Jeremy, who's someone got lost on the way to set.
Yes. Yeah, I think he's got lost and gone to prison recently on a current...
Yeah, well, he's been disgraced. I mean, that, it was bad enough being compared to him before.
You know that porn star you look like? Now it's got worse for you, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah. It's good news and bad news.
We should probably talk about your kids at some point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I want to use that to lead into your child.
Okay.
Does your child... Sorry, what have you got? You've got a boy who's 12, right? Something like that?
He just turned 13.
Just turned 13.
My little girl's 10.
Lovely.
And your little girl's 10. Mm. So how do they feel? Because when I was growing up, my dad had a ponytail. Ooh. And I found that you know...
Yeah, you've been tarred with the same brush then, haven't you?
You don't like difference when you're a kid in your parents.
No.
How do they feel when you turn up in your Ford Cortina from the 70s, dressed as Ron Jeremy at the school gates? Is that something they're excited by, or...?
My son gets moderately embarrassed by me, I think.
Yeah.
My daughter is of an artistic bent, like I am, so she will happily go to the shops dressed as a wizard from Harry Potter or, you know, roller skates on. She doesn't care about that stuff. But my son... I do try to keep embarrassing him to a minimum, but I mean, there's only so much I can do.
Yeah, of course. You know,
my face is my face, my clothes are my clothes. My clothes.
What I'd say, though, is your personality wise, very sort of gregarious, chatty, and, you know, obviously you're, you know, artistic and sort of like flamboyant in your outfits and stuff, but I'd put you down as sort of quite a normal Welsh bloke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think
like you can chat to anyone. It's not like you sort of go off on weird flights of fancy when you're talking about stuff, you know.
No.
You like a drink, you like the rugby, you like sport. That's quite a Welsh dad.
Sue me. It is, you know. Ellis and Steph, I did the other pod with, are amazed that I spend... When I finish gigs, I tend to spend an hour or two having a drink with everybody after the gig.
Really?
And
on a few of these tour gigs, I've gone to the pub with the punters as well afterwards and just had a game of pool and a few pints. It's been lovely, yeah.
Bloody hell, Mike.
Great, isn't it? Because I'm at that level where we're doing decent-sized venues. I couldn't do if I was doing the O2.
No.
I'd have a bloody good go with them.
Need a big pool table.
But you've got like a 200, 300-seater theatre. Nice, perfect size to go on the razzle with the punters, isn't it?
Now, one thing I know from your Instagram is your parenting-wise, and I don't think we've had this yet, you are the coach of your son's rugby team. Is that right?
I am.
Oh,
I have been since they were under sevens, and they're under 13s now, yeah.
And what's that like as a job? What are the other parents like?
The parents are very nice. It's a nice club. The other thing that you might not be apparent from Instagram, of course, is that it's a Welsh language rugby club.
Right. Oh.
So my son's in Welsh language. I don't speak Welsh. I'm a Welsh learner. So I do try to coach them in Welsh and English, which is interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say, what's one of the most like common things you say? I played football growing up, and it would be when you're young, stop bunching, stop bunching. So I don't know what the equivalent is in rugby when they're young. What is it they're doing a lot of?
You might say edrych y fyny, which is look up. So you're not playing with your eyes down, look up. Pasiwch ar y chwith, which is pass the left, pass your chara there, pass to the right. Aros, stop.
Stop.
Fuck off, what are you doing? We didn't do that in training.
I thought stop was Araf. Or was that Araf slow?
Arav is slow, yeah. Arav. That single F is a soft F. It's like a V, Rob.
Yeah, that's from the motorways. Arav.
Arav.
Arav. Okay, good to know. Because when you drive into Wales, you get told to Arav a lot on the motorway.
You do, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's an absolute Arav frenzy.
And English comics always make a hilarious gag about giraffes, usually at gigs, which is always funny.
Do that.
Giraffes for Oh, no, that's poor.
Yeah, I know, it is poor. It is poor.
That is weak. But some people haven't got the chops and they panic. That's life.
That's it, mate. I'm guilty of the same thing, you know.
We've all been there. Do you worry about being seen to give your son special treatment in the rugby team?
I feel bad for him because there's a fellow called Dave Young who coaches Cardiff, and his son plays as well. And he talked recently about he felt he went harder on his son to not look biased.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's a real balance now. Like, I will pick him up in training more than I pick up other kids, and I will say stuff to him during a game that I want to say to other kids. When we go home, I have to say, listen, mate, I'm not picking on you, but just, you know, there's things I can say to you that I can't say to other people, and they'll listen to me saying it to you, and it might stick a bit.
Oh.
But love him is hard, though, isn't it?
Have you had to drop him from games?
No, he's luckily our best player. He's like his dad.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the issue, isn't it? For the good of the team.
Oh, yeah.
But if he is a good player, then that takes that pressure off you.
If he was crap, I wouldn't coach him, because I couldn't face it.
So when did you realise he wasn't crap?
Well, he got picked for the city, the county, sort of a year early when he was like nine. So he's playing under 11s when he was nine.
Right.
That was fine then. They went to Dublin on a tour. It was great. I went over them. That was his first trip away from Wales, really. It was a rugby tour.
Oh, wow.
Like 2 nights in Dublin with a family that he'd never had a sleepover at a mate's house before.
Oh, really?
And then I'm getting this rugby club in Dublin, meeting this Irish family, and he's off for 3 days. Yeah, it was weird. Very strange.
It's good, though, sport. It does help them, like, you know, with working in a team, experience new stuff and things like that.
Well, I'm an XP teacher, so I'm always going to be a bit biased, but I mean, I do think it is the best thing for kids. It hasn't got to be team sport, but just doing something where you know, you've got to work hard and there's a bit of a meritocracy going on. And
is there a chance he's going to make it? Are you looking at a professional rugby player here, potentially?
He could be, if that's what he wants to do and gets his head down. There's no reason why he can't do it. He's got the talent there, and he'll have the physical attributes if all goes well.
The old puberty's a big deal in rugby, isn't it?
No, he's a big lad.
That is a difference maker at that age. Under 13s to under 15s, there's some players, yeah, big hairy nuts, ploughing through other teams with no skill whatsoever.
Well, I've always worked on him with it, with the passing and the kicking, because there's nothing worse than that, mate, when you see it.
Yeah.
You know, and some parents love that and they go...
It will drive me mad, I think.
He's learning nothing, mate, and nor is any other kid on that pitch.
He's just being bigger.
Yeah, and he'll be bigger till about 15 and everyone will catch you up and then just be the crap kid with no skills.
Yeah. Are you having to deal with touchline parents being wankers?
Unbelievable, mate.
Really?
And don't believe the hype that it's just football, because that is not true.
I didn't know there was hype.
Well, no, there's a sort of...
rugby fans think they're good, don't they?
There's a bit
of
a snobbery with rugby. The people think that, you know...
Oh, that gentleman playing...
It's absolute bollocks.
A sport for hooligans by gentlemen and a sport for gentlemen played by...
Well,
I hate rugby.
Thanks, mate.
No, do you know what? I hate English rugby.
Yeah, English
the
rugby.
The same way...
That's what I was going
to
say.
When you go to Scotland, Ireland or Wales, it's a totally different sport played by totally different people. There's an elitism in England with rugby.
Yeah, very much so.
Rugby league's different.
Whereas Welsh football's got those poncy twats like Ellis James. That's where
awful,
the poncy wankers are.
Those glory hunters.
We don't even have the good decency to live in Wales. Proper plastic Welsh people live in London for their extra dollar. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's why Ellis James goes over the top with all the Welsh language stuff, just because he knows he's not really Welsh anymore.
I got nothing to prove, mate.
He's lived in London longer than he's lived in Wales.
Yeah, of course he has.
What does that make him?
I'm making less money here because I love my country.
Good for you, Mike.
Thanks, mate. But you do get the parents and the coaches who give you a really hard time. And my problem is, I've always had a fairly short fuse.
Right.
I mean, I refereed the first half of a game last week and it got so fractious that I just said, I'm not doing the second half. That's fine. You can referee it. I don't need this bollocks.
Did you?
I gave someone else the whistle. Yeah. Because I had the coach and the players on the pitch swearing at me at an under-13s rugby game.
Was your team playing as well, was it?
Yeah, my boys' team was playing. And we just happened to be a lot better than they were. But rather than think, well, we're getting beaten by 5 tries in the first half because we're not as good, they think this must be the referee's fault because we can't possibly be that bad.
And are you sending them off and stuff?
Well, I sent a kid off right towards the end. I said, if you swear at me again, so if you've got something to say to me, talk to the captain, he can have a chat with me. But if you're going to swear at me again, I am going to send somebody off.
So how old's this kid?
13.
13. And what did he call you?
Oh, he just said, fuck off, you fairly, you know, standard swear. So I sent him off.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
That's so bad, isn't it?
I gave a scrum against them. And he said that to me. So I said, off you go. I've told you, go on.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a penalty now, not a scrum for that. You're off. So their coach then said, call that half time, we'll bring them all off. I said, it's not half time, it's 2 minutes to go. We're calling a half time. I said, you're not the referee. So he took his team off. Our team were leaving. And I said, where are you going? I said, come back. We haven't blown the whistle
yet. There's been a mutiny.
I said, tap the ball and go and score a try into the post.
I love you, man.
So that's what he did. Bang, splash. I said, shh, no, that's half time. Okay. They've got to learn, Rob.
They've got to learn.
I mean, they won't, but, you know.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's amazing. And does your daughter play rugby as well?
She had a go at it. She tried for a bit. She sort of mastered the sort of defensive sidestep, but it's not really her thing. She tried football, tried rugby. I think she likes hockey. She loves singing and dancing and acting, that sort of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Just not as bothered?
No, she just thinks it's pointless. And she's got a point. I mean, when you break it down, football and rugby are a bit daft.
It is pointless.
Well, imagine if she's on the sidelines and she's watching her dad and brother not play rugby because they're arguing and being sworn at in the rain.
Yeah.
You sort of think, is this what I want to be doing?
It's just not me. You know, get me back on doing the Frozen soundtrack. Yeah, that sort of stuff. She loves all that.
And your son obviously is growing up now and getting a bit older, getting bigger, and the next few years he's sort of going to develop into a man.
Yeah.
How's that going to feel for you if he's bigger than you and stronger than you?
Well, he will be. He's like a rutting stag now. He's 13.
Really?
Yeah.
He's going to be over 6'4", 6'5", Ben, when he finishes.
Oh, do you reckon?
Well, if you look at all the sort of metrics, yeah. I mean,
so have you looked at the metrics?
You've looked at the metrics.
Oh, yeah, from a young age.
So go on. Well, you would be measuring him up on, like, the percentile chart, because they always tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Look at the percentile chart, see where he's going to be. Hand size is a good indicator of athletic prowess, so is foot size. So, we're, you know.
Bloody hell, it's like having Richard Williams on there.
I've got to think of the retirement, Rob.
So if they've got bigger feet when they're younger or slightly tall for their age, does that mean they'll be better at athletics and sports?
Yeah, hands and feet are really good indicators, usually.
Right, okay.
Things are easier to you. I bought a lovely pair of copper Mundials for myself to referee it. I like whatever pair as well. So I bought 10s. He's in 9s.
He's in 9s, that's what I wear.
But they're a bit too small for him now, so he's going to be in 10s now. So he'll be in size 10 shoes. You know, he's in year 8.
Bloody hell.
So how tall are you, Mike?
I'm 6 foot.
You're 6 foot? Yeah.
So where's it come from? Because your wife's not that tall, is she?
Yeah, no, she's not. She's not very tall.
Yeah, I mean, at night, Mike goes in and stretches him for an hour, don't you?
Yeah.
A couple of bungee cords. But apart from that...
He's got some rigorous physical exercise since he's got 3.
Well, my eldest is a bit like your youngest, not really that bothered about sport and just would just always prefer to do art and sing and dance and stuff.
Lovely.
And my younger one, she like loves sport and she's got the same size feet as her sister, even though she's 2 years younger.
There you go, Rob.
See, I'm telling you.
And she's like, stuff she just took to going on a scooter quite easily and stuff. But
yes.
Yeah, I think you can see from an early age of like their balance and like, it's just if you can naturally just get on with it at a younger age.
Well, my daughter loves that stuff. She picked up ice skating straight away and roller skating. She skateboards. You know, she loves all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But she's just not sporty. She just likes to do her own thing. She'll skate around the house in her skates, you know.
And do they like Elvis? Because you're obviously defined yourself as an Elvis fan. The world's biggest Elvis.
Very touchy. Very touchy subject.
Is it? Because they're aware that he's actually hugely overrated as...
Joshua. They were weaned on Elvis. And then, of their own volition, they've strayed away from the path of righteousness. They don't really... It's heartbreaking. I got videos of the kids when they were little. I used to sing the same sort of Elvis songs to them, get them singing, join in with the dancing, give them a microphone.
Because you're an Elvis impersonator before you're a comedian, just for people that don't know.
We prefer the phrase Elvis tribute artist.
Oh, sorry.
There is in Wales a massive Elvis convention, isn't there? In like,
it's huge.
Porthcawl, is it? Or
Porthcawl, yeah. It's the world's biggest, according to their website. Yeah.
The world's biggest Elvis like meetup, isn't it?
It is. Every third weekend of September.
Yeah, because I was there with the week before and they was like, oh, you should have come next week.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, really?
If you love Elvis or dickheads, get down there because there'll be loads of them.
Did you ever go?
Every year, yeah. I used to host the main tent there, the Graceland Marquee.
All right, mate, stop bragging. We've all got jobs. The Graceland. We've all had gigs, mate. Come on.
Yeah. It was good fun. But I love the King. But
the kid's not into him.
No, they're not now. And it is... It's one of those things. The two things that upset me about the kids growing up. The one is they can't remember my mother anymore. And then just behind that, almost on a level peg, is that they don't like Elvis anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Also, did your mum pass away when they were younger then?
No, she lives down the road. Oh,
they just don't see each other anymore.
Just don't talk. Yeah, yeah, because she loves Elvis. No, so mum passed away when they were like 2 and 5, I think.
Oh.
And I think love them because they're such nice kids. We all think our kids are nice. They would sort of lie for a while about how much they remembered my mother. And I thought one day, this is not...
Start saying stuff from Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Yeah.
The umbrella she used to arrive on.
She wasn't in the Jamaican bobsled team. What are you talking about?
You know, she used to kiss the egg for luck.
Yeah, so but the Elvis thing is weird, isn't it? I'm thinking they might come back round to it.
Well, the film's great, so I think that will get new people into it.
The film is fantastic, isn't it, mate?
So good.
Oh. I saw it 3 times in the cinema in a week. I haven't done that before.
Oh, I'd love the bloke selling the tickets, seeing you turn up, looking like Elvis, back again, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Elvis again? Yeah, no problem. In you go.
Well, with the moustache, I don't get that anymore. But I used to get that because I had the sideburns and the hair.
Yeah, because I met you years ago at a gig, and I think you were still in sort of very Elvis-y sort of mode. I don't think you had the moustache. Yeah. Well, and I didn't know if you was doing Elvis stuff or not, but you still looked enough like Elvis. You look like Elvis on a travel day. Not a show day, so he didn't have like the full white suit on, but just enough to go, what is he? I don't know what's happening here. I don't know what he's going to do when he gets on stage.
Maybe you're doing like a breakfast radio show interview, but you're not doing a full performance.
Yeah. He's got a jazzy shirt on, but shorts. That's sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Elvis, but not as you know it.
Do you think your want for them to like Elvis is the thing that puts them off? Do you know what I mean? It's that...
It might well be that.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of that rebellion going on, especially my son. Yeah. With him not, apart from the rugby, not liking the things that I like.
Really? What does he like?
Well, he's told me he's going to start playing football again next year. Mm. So there's
Could
that.
Could be a goalkeeper. Big lad. More money in it.
I think he'd be in a good centre-half, I think.
How would you feel if you played football over rugby and he could have gone pro in both?
I'd feel immeasurably richer if you did the football. I'd be loving it.
What about if he became a professional rugby player, but due to, you know, a relative, he represented England?
Now, do you know what? This would depend entirely on whether he'd been offered to play for Wales first. So I remember when I was playing sort of national level rugby as a youngster at 18, so I was in the Welsh school squad at that age, and me saying to my mother, because my dad was born in Sussex, right? But he's Welsh, but born in England.
So you're not even Welsh, Mike?
You fucking idiot.
Well, not really. I mean, I'm just like, you're not fully Welsh, really.
My manager would play for England, that was the thing. So I remember saying to my mother.
Yeah. And where was she born?
She's from the Welsh Valley, from Merthyr Vale. A staunch Welsh supporter for the rugby. And I said, man, what if I got offered to play for England? I said, but, you know, England had offered me a place and Wales wouldn't offer me a place. She said, well, what would you do? I said, well, I'd play for England. I said, if I knew that Wales had overlooked me and England wanted to give me a shout, I said, I'd play for England, wouldn't I? She said, well, I wouldn't support you. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, if Wales played England, I'd want Wales to win, wouldn't I? I said, well, if I was playing for England, you'd want Wales to win. She went, yeah. So I'd want you to have a decent game, but I'd want you to get beaten. I said, oh, fair enough. You know, so I think I mean the same sort of thing with my son. I don't know, though. I mean, the English sort of, as you get a little bit older, the school system over there seems to be set up quite well for the rugby and stuff, but I just like him playing in Wales. Like, for the reasons that we mentioned earlier, and I'm not being a snob about it, I just think it's all about sort of clubs and working class over here a bit more. But if football, mate, imagine if he doesn't play sport, any sport, I don't care, as long as he's happy.
How about this, Mike? He plays sort of as a rotation player for Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Like, if you said, you know, his name, people would go, never heard of him, but he's in a Premier League team, earning really good money, living in Bournemouth, plays sort of 10, 15 games a season.
Best of both, right, isn't it? But, 60 grand a week and no one knows who you are.
Exactly. So nobody knows he is, and he's on probably, say, 5 million a year, maybe more, right? Or he plays professional rugby, not earning as much, but is a starter for Wales.
Oh, Rob.
And he's on, I don't know what a professional rugby player would get normally, but like...
Yeah, you'll know what would that be?
Half a million quid.
He's on £500,000 a year, which is decent, you know, obviously a huge amount of money, but...
Great money.
£5 million the other, but no one knows he is. And he's a starter for Wales, and he's there for 10 years, Six Nations, World Cup. Yeah.
What a horrible conundrum. Well, the parent's answer is you'd want him to be happy, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But it'd be play for Wales, really, in that situation. Because you'd still be well off, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You're making £500,000 a year for 10 years.
Yeah.
Or you could make 10 years salary in 1 year.
Yeah, but you're never going to spend £200 million a year.
Well, give it a go.
Yeah, I'd have a good passion in mind.
Imagine the garage you could build for your cars.
Be awesome, wouldn't it? Wouldn't be a fucking tree in Cardiff.
So, what else is he into then as a teenager? Obviously, you bond over the rugby and the football and sport and stuff, but is he into TikTok? Is it that? What is it a bit of a...
Yeah, he does watch a lot of that on his phone. He plays a lot of FIFA online with his mates. Just teenage stuff, isn't it? He loves his weights. He started doing weight training. Now he's loving his weight training.
See, that wasn't even a thing when I was a kid.
No, I could see.
Or as an adult, Josh.
How dare you? As a parent, I could consider you to be, you know, you're quite modern and, you know, liberal, and I can imagine quite fun as a parent.
Yeah.
How does it differ from the parenting you had growing up in Barry?
Ooh, we moved house last year, and my biggest thing is I want the kids to feel that they can bring their mates home anytime, they can take what they like out of anywhere, they can play with what they want to do, they can go in the garden, they can go do what they want. And all their mates can do the same thing as well.
Yeah.
So the big difference for me was growing up, I mean, Dad kind of seen my rugby games and that, and Mum was a good mum and everything. You know, I had a good childhood by 70 standards.
Yeah.
But I never felt like it was like an open house. I never felt like it was my house, my friend's house. It was like, this is very definitely my mum and dad's house.
Yeah.
I've got to ask permission to stuff and ask permission for this. And can this person come over? Can they do this? I never wanted that to be the case.
Yeah.
I'm not in my wife.
See and not be heard, isn't it, basically? That you just were like, shut up.
Yeah, well, I remember my dad would smoke, like, in the living room, you know, watching Match of the Day or whatever, you know. He doesn't smoke now, but he'd smoke a lot back then. And I'd be sort of sat, I'd just make these little filters out of yoghurt pots and cotton wool, and I'd sit in the corner like some kid from 1950s US government commercial, just with this thing over my nose, just breathing, trying to filter out the tobacco fumes. Like a dick, you know.
No, I think, what a lovely memory.
Yeah, it was lovely watching Grandstand with a gas mask.
Well, yeah, I think the 70s, because you're like, you know, how old was you like in your 40s when you had the kids? Or late 30s?
Let me work it out now. I was 37 when we had Ben, and I was 40 when Lily was born, yeah.
Yeah, so my dad was about in his 40s when he had us and stuff like that. Mm. Did you think that, like, you weren't going to have kids, or what was you thinking? Or was you always going to be an older parent?
It generally never crossed my mind. I thoroughly enjoyed myself in my 20s, going all over the place and having no responsibilities. And then I met Kelly when I was about 30, 31. And we just gone great together. And I was, for the first time in my life, I was thinking, oh, I can actually imagine myself staying with one person for a long time. And that never happened before. So we went out for dinner for a couple of years and we got engaged. And then after 2 years, we got married. All quite traditional. And I was still like mid-30s thinking, loving life, yeah. You know, holidays and going hot places and enjoying ourselves. And then she was like, as she was sort of 30 then, I think with women, without being too cliche, I think the clock starts to tick a little bit. And she said, I think we should start a family. I was like, oh. Okay. I'd never thought of it. I'd never crossed my mind.
It hadn't even entered your mind.
So I said, all right. I said, we're obviously a couple, so that's fine. And then genuinely what happened was...
Would you describe yourself as a deep thinker, Mike? Seems fine. Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, if you want, yes.
She was buzzing. She was buzzing with that.
She knew she had the right bloke. So genuinely, she'll kill me for this as well, is the day we decided, we went to bed that night and I said, do you want a boy or a girl? She said, oh, boy, please. And that was it. I got her pregnant with Ben on the first go.
Did you?
And I just thought, well, that's obviously, I'm an alpha male. This is what happened. And then with my little girl then, a couple of years later, we decide... Because Kel's a teacher, she wanted a kid born in the first term. You know, she's been looking at the metrics. Yeah. So, you know, she wanted the autumn term. So I said, okay, well, no problem. Girl this time? Okay. Second time took ages. Oh, my God. My daughter was born right at the end of August. She's the youngest kid in the year.
Oh, yeah.
We tried for months and months, and we tried everything. It was hilarious.
What do you mean everything?
Oh, fucking hell. I can remember we'd have all the sort of charts and when was the best time to have sex and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then she'd read that cool semen is more productive.
Right. As in temperature, not like it's got a backwards cap on a skateboard.
So you're going to need to just shave off your moustache.
I used to go, before I went to bed, I was so unromantic. I used to have a mug, like one of my old coffee mugs. I'd fill it with chilled water. I had to put my balls in a mug for like 5 minutes before I went to bed. And then she'd be doing like upside down cycle kicks and stuff and trying to get things, you know, it was all very functional the second time round.
Can I ask about the coffee mug? Did that continue as a coffee mug or was that...
It came back into rotation.
Your special nut mug.
That's the guest mug. We get builders round.
Town planners.
Town planners going to
get your chops right there. Yeah, because it is quite, when you're trying, if it's not happening straight away, it becomes almost like a part-time job. It's non-stop, isn't it?
Bind, isn't it? And you get a phone call saying, can you come on? I was like, oh, I got it.
It becomes so functional.
The mug's in the fridge. All right, thank you.
As much as the last conversation won't hint at this, but you were a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the two are related, but yeah.
So you spent your time around kids as well, but you just had no interest. Did that make you want to be a parent?
Well, I love kids. I've always got on well with kids because I'm a bit childish. These days, I'd probably be diagnosed with ADHD if I was in school. Yeah, pretty sure. Like, my wife's still a teacher. She said, definitely, definitely, definitely.
And when were you a teacher? What decade were you a teacher? 90s?
So 99 to 2007.
Right.
Like 8 years? Yeah.
And what was that like compared to, like, the teaching... when you were a kid versus being a teacher when you're a teacher?
A lot less violent than when I was in school. I sort of caught the end of corporal punishment, really.
Did you?
Yeah. Even though it was illegal, technically, still a lot of it went on still.
Fucking hell.
You still got slapped and punched and kicked. And
bloody hell.
Yeah. Bashed your heads together and, you know.
Fuck.
There was all that sort of stuff still going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when that happens, do birds appear or is that just cartoons?
Just cartoons, yeah.
Okay, cool. Never seen it.
Yeah. Your eyes do whirl around like that, though.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Yeah. So we're none of that.
Did you enjoy being a teacher?
I loved it. I loved, because I loved being around kids and having a laugh and doing. I didn't like. I was terrible at the paperwork and planning and all that sort of side of things. Awful at that.
And so you obviously did parents' evenings.
Yeah, yeah. Loved a parents' evening.
Now, obviously, your kids are in school. Yeah. Are you judgmental on that? Because is your wife a teacher as well?
So she's deputy head. She's very conscientious and very good at what she does.
Right. So when it comes to your parents' evening with your kids, when you're going in and any sort of problems at the school, are you both quite sort of judgmental? Because obviously you know how it works, and especially for her. Are they at her school, by the way?
No, no, they're both in Welsh language school. So
yes, okay.
I think because I taught and she's a teacher, you understand it's bloody hard work teaching.
Yeah.
You know, if you worked it out as an hourly rate, the amount of hours that good teachers put in is phenomenal. So I got nothing but respect for them. So I always, I've never been one of the judgmental types as a parent, I don't think. You know, you want your kids to get a good education and you want the school to be doing their job, but you've got to cut them some slack. I mean, there's so much. And I think in Wales, it's worse. You know, per head spend on education is lower in Wales. The bigger class sizes. It's a lot of stress. Like, you know, then they don't need extra stress. So, yeah, but then... The flip side of that is, because especially with, because Kelly knows the score, because she obviously in her job deals with all that side of things. She knows what they should be getting and what they should be doing and what where they should be.
Yeah.
She'll sort of, it's a bit good cop, bad cop, you know.
So you'll go in and smooth it over and she'll deliver the slap.
I give him a cigarette and Kelly comes in and smacks it out of their mouth.
Has your son had a drink yet?
I don't think he has. Yeah. I don't mind if he does. Like I've said to him before, do you want a chandy or something? Or do you want a, he doesn't want one. And to be honest with you, and this is really hypocritical, I'd love him not to drink.
Yeah.
Because I'm a worrier. Because I think I'm such a... I love my kids to bits. And I am a very overprotective dad. I know that. I'm much too overprotective with them. So I think of all the messes I got myself in on booze as a youngster. I don't want them to do that. And I know there's part of growing up. I just think, God, I'm terrified now. If they're away for the night, you know, if they go to the shops after school, I'm like, oh my God.
Well, because it is part of growing up, but also when you grow up as a teenager, you'll make mistakes and do things that you look back and cringe, go, oh God, why was I doing that? Yeah. I was a silly 16-year-old. But it's much better for them to make their mistakes when they've not had 10 pints.
Yeah, exactly that, isn't it?
It's sort of an amplifier, isn't it? Where, like, you know, if you go around the world, there are teenagers that don't just get absolutely shit-faced in the park on cider because
completely.
We're used to it in the UK. It's insane.
It's a British thing, isn't it? And there's always a politician that will come out and say, we need to have more of a sort of a European drinking culture. But that's not our culture, is the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It never has been. We don't do that. We just get pissed.
Yeah.
That's what British people do.
Yeah.
We've got a culture. It's called getting pissed. So that's the thing. Isn't it?
You're not going to get a 15-year-old lad who's going, I'm going to go out and have a glass of wine with dinner. Like,
oh, can you imagine? You know, no. Down by the canal.
Yeah.
No.
I'll just have a half a Guinness, actually, for Paddy's Day, just to celebrate, politely.
What can happen?
I think, though, the younger generation are a bit more interested in going to the gym and their bodies and what they look like and mental health, way more than they used to.
While I was growing up, sports people were people like Tony Adams.
Yeah. Brian Robson.
Bill Werbenick, yeah. Alex Higgins, Brian Robson, right? People who were pissheads and sports people. Whereas now, you know, my boy loves Gareth Bale. Well, Gareth Bale doesn't drink.
No.
A lot of his favourite footballers don't drink.
Of course
drink.
He doesn't. He's the world's most boring man.
You can't say that to a Welshman, Josh.
Good golfer.
Great golfer.
He's a good golfer,
golfer. Very good footballer.
I've got quite a curveball question about a Welsh person. Alex Jones. We had Alex Jones on the pod. She was amazing.
Yeah.
Have you met Alex Jones?
I have.
Yeah. Because I saw a clip of you with Alex Jones in which you failed to break the world record for hugging the most people in a minute.
Yes, true. And it was very contentious as well, Josh, might I add.
I'd say it was one of the most bizarre clips I've ever seen in my life.
Is it on the One Show?
It was a thing called Make Wales Happy, which was a high budget...
and impossible task.
A relatively high budget programme made by BBC Wales a couple of years ago. And one section of it was... I did various experiments about happiness.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, they wanted me to break the world hugging record for a minute. And it had to be different people. It couldn't be the same person twice. So there was a fellow there from the Guinness Book of Records with his blazer and his clipboard. Live TV was the last segment. And I smashed the old record by about 6 or 7 hugs. But previously, about 2/3 into the hug, into the record attempt, an old lady saw me and sort of stumbled. I don't know if she was... she's not made of wood, obviously. So I don't know if she got enamoured of me. I don't know. Something happened. She lost her footing. I sort of stepped forward to grab her, gave her a hug, stepped back, kept going. At the end, I was disqualified for leaving my hug mark in the Guinness Book of Records. Disqualified on live television. And they said, do you want to go again? And the director's going, can't, it's live TV. You fucked it, mate. So I was robbed of the world hugging record.
Oh, Mike.
I know.
Absolutely brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Mike, I wanted to ask you another question as well. Mm. I've sort of followed your fitness journey on Instagram, where I think it was in lockdown you sort of lost a lot of weight and got very muscly. And
I got buffy, didn't I? Yeah.
You got really buff. Mm. How old? You must have been, what, like in your 40s then when you was doing that?
48.
So I think sometimes the dad bod thing, and then sometimes when you become a dad, you get busy, you start eating crap, and that's when it's sort of, you start to lose it, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to try and get ripped. I've seen you get ripped. Mm. What advice would you give to any parents listening that want to get back on it? How did you do it? What was you doing to get back in shape?
I've got to get back on it, because the golden rule is, and it sounds like you're stating the obvious, is consistency. And I did it.
Yeah.
I'd always been a good nick, and then we had kids, and you end up having takeaways, not going out, not sleeping, and getting knackered and not doing stuff. And I ended up getting up to 20 plus stone.
Blimey.
I was, you know, yeah.
You really do like Elvis, don't you?
Still nice. Do you remember in lockdown, they were saying that the weight was a big factor, remember? But I thought, right, I got a young family, you know, for God's sake, give yourself a chance if you get it. I got locked down. I got COVID fairly early on before the vaccine.
Mm.
But I'd lost a lot of weight by that point. So the thing for me was, the gyms were shut at the time as well. This was the irony of it. But I thought, okay, I'm going to find something I enjoy doing, which is watching 70s TV, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I got a Rockford Files box set. I got a Starsky and Hutch box set. I got a Kojak box set. And every day before I had breakfast, I would put one of them on, sit on the exercise bike, and just pedal for 45 minutes watching the Rockford Files or watching Kojak.
Yeah.
But do that every day of the week. And then as I got fitter, I'd watch two episodes. That was it. And then when the gyms opened again, I started lifting a bit of weight to get back on the weight.
So really, so just from the exercise bike for 45 minutes in the morning?
Huge difference.
And you wasn't doing anything else? That was it, really? And then you started doing weights when the gyms opened?
And then when the gyms opened, I went back on the weights again. And I did a lot of weights when I was younger, so it was easier for me to get strong again, because I'd been strong before. But the thing with... Well, someone said you can't outrun your fork, which is a great saying, right?
Mm.
Can't outrun.
Well, if you do 45 minutes on an exercise bike, it seems like you've done a lot of work, but you have like a Twix, and that's, all those calories are back on again.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's fairly depressing. But because you've gone on the bike in the morning and you've had a sweat on, you tend to say no to that Twix because you think, oh, I want to have that because I've just trained.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So you start making good decisions because you've been up early doing a bit of work. So it's just consistency. And then, stupidly, like an idiot, when the pubs opened up and it was all full on again, you just go back and think, oh, I'll just do it. I'll do three times a week. I'll do twice a week. I'll do once a week. I'll do twice a month. It'll be fine.
I'll have a
and then
Twix.
You're doing no times a month. Yeah, give me that Twix. So I'm back on it again myself now, Rob. So you'll do it, mate.
Yes,
you'll
that's do the it. Plan. Consistency.
I want to get in shape by July the 1st.
July the 1st. What's happening then?
Canada Day. I always have a little celebration on Canada Day.
Why?
I just used to live in Canada. I like it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So July the 1st, tops off and a bit of maple syrup. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, we covered a little maple syrup and getting licked off by a grizzly bear.
Perfect. Sounds like a plan. Should we do a joint tops off photo on July the 1st, Mike?
I'm in, Rob. I'm in.
Yeah.
This is the peer pressure we need.
I'll join in with that.
July the 1st.
You got a bit of that?
We're all going to stick up a tops off photo on Instagram.
This is good, man.
Mike Bubbins consistency challenge.
Oh, my God.
We need it. We need
Mate,
something.
Make my hands go.
Yeah.
This is the calendar people want to see. Do you know what I mean?
What? The July the 1st Canada calendar of me, you and Rob topless.
Yeah.
Canada consists Canada Day, 1st of July.
Yeah.
Me.
There we go.
Fucking hell. I've got Glastonbury the week before that.
That'll be fine. You've been good enough at Glastonbury.
Yeah, I'm going to be tops off at Glastonbury, just getting ready for the pick.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm going to take a vest and put it in my back pocket when it gets hot.
Perfect.
And walk around ripped.
Oh my God.
Let's do it. July the 1st.
But I want people to go, is that Rob Beckett? And they go, it can't be.
Can't be. Magic Mike, isn't it?
I think we should agree to that, and Michael needs to leave it the episode that the July the 1st we'll put a topless photo on Instagram.
Agreed.
It'd be funny if we all just post us fat on the 1st of July.
I put weight on.
Either way, it's amazing.
If we get comments saying, I just think it's really powerful what you guys are doing,
yeah.
Because a lot of people would be ashamed to put these photos up. But
yeah, it gets heat the wrong way. Like, yeah. I just think... Body positivity in overweight men should be celebrated more. And we're all going, but this is the best we've looked. We've all lost the stone. You don't need to lose weight, though, Josh.
See, I'm not body shaming anybody. If you want to be big, be big.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not going to go, people aren't big,
yeah.
But I would like to be not big.
Yes.
So I'm going to try and enjoy the 1st.
July the 1st.
Get my top off with you two. That's what the plan.
Yes.
I didn't know that was a plan until about 3 minutes ago, but that is the
plan.
That
is the plan. Right, I'm going to put that in there at July the 1st. Tops off.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Perfect. Okay, that's what we need. We need that peer pressure.
I'll be in my back garden. I'll be next to, hopefully, the hot tub.
But don't you live off next to a man who's called, like, Tops Off Steve or something?
Tops Off Vic, I moved, haven't I? I used to live next door to Tops Off Vic, but he comes to my house now more than he did when I lived next door to him, to be fair.
Why was he called Tops Off Vic? Because he just never have a top off?
He was always gardening with his top off. When we did the arena show, we could, like, talk about Tops Off Vic on the podcast quite a bit. I said, mate, do you want to come down to the arena on Saturday? He said, yeah, what for? I said, well, that podcast to do with the boys. Yeah, no problem. I said, do you mind coming out on the stage and saying hello to people? No, no, it'd be great. I said, do you mind taking the top off? No, I'll be fine. So this, like, 78-year-old bloke comes out with his top off and there's 4,000 people chatting his name. It was hilarious.
Well, that'll be us. That's our future, isn't it? July the 1st. This is great. This is exciting.
It's exciting.
Thanks, Mike. And
lovely, boys. Thanks a lot.
And also, listen to the socially... Is it still called the Socially Distanced Sports Bar?
It is called that.
You've stuck with your lockdown name, whereas we deserted ours.
I know. At Distant Pod. But people call it Distant Pod now, so we can't change it now.
Fair enough. Give it a listen. It's a great podcast. Thanks, Mike. And I'll see you on the Canada Day.
Lovely, boys. Take care. July the 1st, here we come.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Mike Bubbins.
The Bubster. Loved him. I love Mike Bubbins.
He's so good, isn't he? He's one of those people, if you met him on holiday, he'd be the greatest person you've ever met.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You'd be like, this guy. Yeah. I've just agreed to take my top off with him on the 1st of July.
I'm just glad he exists. Do you know what I mean? You know when you meet people, you go, there's no one like Mike Bubbins.
Well, do you know what's quite inspiring about him, especially with that weight loss thing, is like when you see photos of him, when he got in shape in lockdown, he was he looked like someone who's going to be in the new Avengers film.
Yeah.
And then, like he said, he can occasionally let it slip where he sort of, you know, he just looks like a normal dad, just a busy dad, not, you know, massive or anything. But it shows you, if you do put the consistency in,
I would love to have Mike Bubbins as a dad. Yeah. You know, when we meet people and you go, these are good dads.
Also, we really need to unpack your dad having a ponytail.
Well, we'll come to that next week.
Right, see you next week. Bye.
Bye.